This is Celtics Beat on CLNS Radio, and I am Larry H. Russell.
One of the things we're going to talk about is Isaiah Thomas called out the Celtics for quote-unquote experimenting. Did you see that?
Yep, I did.
Yeah. Well, let's start there. We're both recording, right?
Yep.
All right. You're now listening to All Many Fallen NBA Show, and I have a great guest, one of my favorites, Larry H. Russell over at CLNS. He's been killing it. They've been picking up great shows, and if you haven't been listening, if you haven't downloaded the app, then you're missing out. Larry, thanks for jumping on and talking Celtics. There's no one better at it.
Oh, there are plenty of people better at it. That's why we're trying to continue to reach out to those that we can find better people who talk about the Celtics than me. But I sincerely appreciate those kind words, Chris. I've always been a huge fan of what you do, and I consider myself one of, in the words of The Rock, one of the millions. That's a real throwback going back to some late 90s geekies. But and sure enough, I don't know if this is an omen, a sign of the Roman gods, but I just got a Google Calendar notification, Axeman Skype podcast.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Like it's on cue.
Roman omen. That's two great jokes so far this morning. I feel pretty good about it. Normally, I'm not up this early. All right, let's start with the Clippers game last night, because I'm
You're probably welcome on that, not that up this early, by the way.
Yeah, no, I know.
The Clippers game a few minutes ago.
Yeah, last night the Celtics fell 116 to 102 to the Clippers, and Isaiah Thomas afterwards said that he was upset that the Celtics are still experimenting in game 84, and he said, we can't be experimenting. And recently I listened to a great podcast. It was you on Coach Nick's podcast, another CLNS podcast, and you were talking about just that. You know, why is Brad Stevens still experimenting? And now in game 64, are you of the same mind where you're just sort of scratching
your
head?
You just went from game 84 to game 64.
Did I say 84?
Yeah, you did.
All right, so we're in game 904 now, and why is he still experimenting?
It's early in the morning. It's early in the morning. We forgive you.
I'm going to take a sip of my coffee really quick.
That's okay. So that's also the big question. I've been asking that for a long, long time. But at the same time, there's two things about it. You can say it's a glass half empty and a glass half full. Game 63, why are they still experimenting? I don't know. You're going to have to ask Brad. Hate to do that to you, Chris. Sorry.
Well, I have a theory, all right? And I think it's an informed theory. It's not just like sort of...
I'm very interested in hearing this because, quite frankly, I don't have the best theory as to why. They experimented last year, but that kind of ended around mid-January, and they settled on a rotation, and that's when that team started to get rolling. Pretty much January 16th was the day when last year's team started to get moving. They had a big win in Washington. But I am very interested in hearing that theory. It's almost like I am now hosting your show, by the way. I just interrupt you, storm over you.
Well, so here's my thought. It reminds me a lot of the 2011 Mavericks, because we had one superstar scorer who was just not all that great defensively and more depth than most of other teams. I mean, Celtics have a ton of depth, 1 through 10. They even have a rookie who's contributing, despite some skepticism by certain Celtics podcast hosts.
I know, it's ridiculous, too. I never got those people. I called that one. I had that one all the way.
Right. But... That's my thought, right? It's like really guard heavy. And what the Mavericks figured out, what Carlisle figured out, is that by experimenting all season long, and that's really what he did, he found all these lineups that were secret weapons. In fact, he found the first death lineup, and that's how he beat the Heat, is there was this death lineup.
Best lineup in the NBA that year. Specifically, it was the best five-man unit in the NBA that season.
Right, yeah. No, that J.J. Barea, Deshaun Stevenson, Caron Butler, Sean Marion, and Dirk at the center. That's my thinking, is that...
Real quick trivia question. Guess what was number two that year in 2010-2011 five-man units net rating? Number two.
Oh, man.
Okay, hint. I'm here.
Yeah. Okay, well, so let's see. Who was on the Celtics in 2011? Was it like the big three lineup except...
Rondo, Ray Allen, Pierce, KG, Shaq.
Really? I thought not Eddie House?
No, House was gone, and that was the year when Shaquille O'Neal had that big first half of the season, and their team raced out to the best record in the NBA. They traded Perkins and for Jeff Green, and they flopped, you know, flamed out in the second round. Story for another day. That was six full years ago. Let's hear that awesome theory before I keep interrupting you, dude, on your show.
Well, so, I mean, that's really it. I think that he's lineup experimenting. I think he's his equivalent of making an Ibaka trade, his equivalent of making a Paul George trade, to sort of exploit weaknesses, perceived weaknesses at least, in the Warriors and Cavaliers is I'm going to be doing wacky stuff because my team probably isn't as talented and I'm just going to have to out-coach people. And, you know, I mean, if people are right about Brad Stevens, he's got quite the reputation. People think he's a whiz kid. I mean, he might be able to do it. And I think it's probably the Celtics' best chance, right?
Fair, very, very fair theory, and I would have replaced probably aren't as talented as the Warriors and Cavs with definitely not as talented as the Warriors and Cavs. It's also, too, what I've been saying, in that it's a glass half full, glass half empty. It's still just, you know, it's frustrating from a fan aspect of, oh, geez, here we go, second year in a row. And in this, there was minimal roster turnover outside of the addition of Al Horford, whereas opposed to last year, there was a lot of roster turnover. And last year, they still settled on a rotation in mid-January, and they are able to start cooking after that. This year, with minimal roster turnover, there is still a lot of lineup experimentation, although I still say a little bit less than there was last year. So this isn't the first time where a upper echelon player on the team, let alone the best player on the team, last year was Jay Crowder after a blowout loss in November in Orlando, who complained about, you know, the constant mixing and matching of different five-man units. This year, it's Isaiah. And before anybody says, oh, geez, he just called out the coach, this is definitely not the first time Isaiah has done that. In fact, after they got smashed by the Warriors, which is very rare for an NBA team to get blown out by Golden State. That says a lot. Yeah, that says a lot about how horrible the Celtics are. But after a game against Golden State in mid-November, forgive me if I think, yeah, what, like November 14th, as I want to say, check how good I am on that. It was a Friday night blowout loss. Isaiah said, you know, hey, the coach kind of pulled the cord on that game that we should have been playing at the end of the game there and blah, 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 blah. And it was, oh, geez, Isaiah, and we called out the coach. So it's not the first time that he has done something like that. Me personally, I think just Isaiah is frustrated in the sense it's twofold. First off, hey, listen, they're losing games out in the West Coast. That was to be expected. You reference what, you know, my appearance on Coach Nick's B-Ball Breakdown podcast of what I said on the show, constant lineup experimentation. What I also said on that show with Coach Nick and what I've also was talking about when the team was playing very, very well in January, which I thought had a lot to do with the schedule. And even in February, it looked good on paper record-wise, and they were winning a lot of games. I believe they only lost four games for the month of January. They continued their pretty good play in February, picked up some big wins against the Raptors. I think they beat the Cavs on March 1st, but they had a lot of big wins in February as well, and they had a good West Coast road trip. I kept saying, though, I still feel like there's a regression of the means here with the Celtics, right? They had a point differential that was it was like something like, I think, I don't know what it is this morning. Was it like plus 2.1 or plus 2.3?
They rattled off like six wins in a row.
And it's not indicative of what their record should be, and they have very few blowout wins this year. They crushed the Lakers the other night, but that's there's nothing really to that. They've beaten down the Magic a few times. They've beaten down the Nets in Brooklyn, and I want to say that's it. I mean, I want to say they only have a handful of complete wire-to-wire 20-point blowout
wins.
They've
had some good wins. The Cavs win the other night.
Oh, they have some very, very good wins, but there have been so many wins just by, you know, just two or three possessions. So I felt there was just a little bit of a regression of the means in them. And there was, I also checked, I think it was around, now really forgive me for this. I should have done my research before coming on your awesome Almighty Baller podcast show, one of the top NBA podcasts on iTunes. So forgive me for not doing the research, but it was around like mid-February I checked, and the Celtics were something like ranked second in field goal percentage in contested shots. And that's usually a big, you know, red flag of there could be some overachieving here. So I finally think that you are starting to see this now. And I was on my show kind of giving a Max Kellerman, Tom Brady is going to fall off a cliff type thing, whereas you're inevitably going to be right because that's going to prove itself to be the case. But I think there is right now with the Celtics a little bit of a slight regression of the means. If you reference, you watch the Clippers game last night. See, against Phoenix, I said to myself, wow, they really missed Al Horford in that game, right? There was just there was minimal spacing. There was no ball movement whatsoever, and he's contributed so much to that. and they couldn't get any open shots. But last night against the Clippers, they were getting open shots, and they just, you know, flat out, here's the NBA cliche, make or miss league. They weren't going in last night. There were a few games like that they had against that in Sacramento. I felt like there was more of that on their slate. So this could very well be it. And honestly, as bizarre as it is, it's just not really going to be an issue for them, because even if the worst case scenario happens on this West Coast road trip, and that's very much in case, because right now they're 1-2. They play Golden State Wednesday night. Last game of the trip is against Denver. That's not the best matchup for the Celtics. They've already beaten the heck out of the Celtics in Boston earlier this year. Plus, it's the last game on a five-team road trip. Even if they pretty much go, 1-4, I believe. Yeah, 1-4. After that, their schedule's cake. It really is. And they would have to try to really have a Toronto Raptors like midseason collapse in them. So I also personally think there it is, regression of the means. I really think that's what's going on with this team in very simple terms.
But that's maybe okay, though, if you're going to use completely different lineups. So is this entirely insane? And if it is, tell me why. Because I'm just going to say it, right? Okay. What do you think about Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Jaylen Brown, Jay Crowder? Yeah.
As a lineup? How often have they played together?
I think like four or five minutes.
So that's the thing. They have
every one of those guys can get the rebound and push the pace, and they would all be faster than their counterparts.
Well, these three guard lineups going all the way back to Rondo, Smart in his rookie year, you know, in very few games under his belt, by the way. Rondo, Smart, and Bradley. It started with them, with Stevens. He has loved the three guard lineup. I don't know if that's, you know, come from the whole college thing and everything.
Kind of Carlisle-y.
But none of those three guard lineups. None of those three guard lineups have ever really performed. And I guess you can throw out the whole Rondo thing, because that was a terrible team, and so whatever. But I mean, even this year, when they've done things like this unit's played together a lot, and that's Rondo, Bradley, Smart, Crowder, Horford. That lineup is not doing well.
That's the lineup that everyone thought was going to be good. The IT3&D lineup.
Me personally, I hate Smart off the ball.
I really do buy into the idea, though. You know, Bill Simmons is always saying he makes winning basketball plays, and I mean, the most competitive game you guys had last year in the playoffs was when Marcus Smart was, you know, going nuts and also sort of locking down Paul Millsap.
Covering Paul Millsap. Yep. Oh, no, he's exceptional. He's also done the same thing earlier this year.
I think you sort of need him in the game if you're going to be playing that small. I mean, just because he can play bigger than his size. I mean, I think that would be important. Look, this might not work. It might be insane. I think it's going to be the type of stuff that Brad Stevens is going to be experimenting, because I just feel like they have nothing to lose.
Except for basketball games.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, in terms of teams like putting Washington another banner up in the rafters.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, but there's also still a lot of pressure. And I would say, I think there's a little more pressure on this team to perform this year than just say, oh, well, you know, second place or no place, right? I think it's all about free. I think a lot of it has to do with what they're going to do this summer in terms of free agency. I mean, it's all about, you would like to think, signing Gordon Hayward this summer. So in that regards, if you have that mind, and this is just an outside vantage point that I just have on my own. In that regards, it's like, okay, if on a scale of 1 to 10, the importance of what is the most quantitatively best way to estimate what is a successful season and what is not, right? What's the best way? I would just say simply just improvement from last year. And that's simply just winning 50 games, which I think is a cinch at this point. Even if they do flame out in the rest of this road trip, which I would probably bet that they will, they should still win 50, win the 50 and win a playoff series. So really it just comes down to simply winning the playoff series. And if I had to put that on a 1 to 10 scale, just roughly, I would put that as like a 6.8. I don't want to give it like a 7. I would say that's somewhat urgent. But like, let's say this team is – I hate saying that. Ugh. Like, let's say this is just so cliche. Kill myself for saying cliche things. But let's say the Celtics, you know, do something. I think – so it comes down to Gordon Hayward. right? He doesn't make an all-NBA team. Therefore, the Celtics can make an offer that's fairly competitive with Utah, but you just put yourself in Gordon Hayward's shoes for a second. If the Celtics were to lose in the first round and be just another Eastern Conference team that lost in the first round, how could Gordon Hayward justify to himself that where he's settled in Utah, he's played what now there, like 6 or 7 years, I believe. He's improved tremendously.
Yeah, but what if you get Tom Brady on a jet?
Yeah, I don't think it's like
Tom Brady. And fly to Gordon Hayward.
There's a better chance that the Celtics ask me to go recruit Gordon Hayward than they would Tom Brady go ask Gordon Hayward. But, you know, put yourself in Gordon Hayward's shoes for about 1 second, and no more than 1 second. I don't want anybody pretending that they're Gordon Hayward for more than 1 second. You could just say to yourself, why would you go leave the Utah Jazz, which is pretty much on it now on an equal level, to go to just another recent conference team that lost in the first round? I think it's fairly important that Boston goes second round, or God forbid, even the Eastern Conference Finals, if they want to be competitive in that little Gordon Hayward quote unquote sweepstakes this summer. So it isn't with the Celtics, and not, it's not just a Warriors or Spurs or Cavs championship or bust mindset. I think it's, you know, like I said, on a 1 to 10 scale, 6.8, 7-ish in terms of the importance of they actually make concrete progress that is, you know, viewable to just the standard anyone else who's, you know, looking at the franchise.
Well, there's always the Brad Stevens connection. That's one
you're
thing.
You need a little more than that.
Well, yeah. And okay, what if it were to be the case? And after this, I was so proud of myself. I was going to go not into hypotheticals, but this will be the last hypothetical.
I stay away from those too, so I don't blame you.
Yeah, and then I want to talk about some of the Eastern matchups, because I think you're right. It might be very important for them to get past the first round, maybe to the Eastern Conference Finals. So I think it's an interesting possibility that if the Celtics do flop a little bit, there's so many potential moves that they can make, especially if they draw a card that ends up being Markelle Fultz. So, I mean, Gordon Hayward would maybe be compelled to join the Celtics if Jimmy Butler were on the Celtics, or if you bundled together Jay Crowder and Al Horford and traded them for DeAndre Jordan or something like that, you know, a center that maybe fits a little bit better as a rim roller.
This is the best part about either hosting a Celtics podcast, me, or talking about the Celtics on an NBA-centric podcast, because with the Celtics, there's just so much to freaking talk about. You can talk draft. Yeah. You can talk about trade possibilities. You can talk about still what's a halfway decent basketball team. That I have to say.
Could do a daily show then.
No, please. I'm happy with my 45 minutes a week.
So what do you think about that, though? That's been something that the Celtics have done in the past to sort of coordinate
there's
trades
a shoot
with free
drop
agent
with them,
acquisitions.
Though, there's a shoe to drop with them, though, anyways, because of the bird rights that they have with certain players coming up. Avery Bradley's contract situation. There's going to be a situation where Danny Ainge is not going to want to lose a decent amount of players, i.e. Bradley, i.e. Kelly Olynyk, i.e. Isaiah Thomas in a year and a half. He's not going to want to lose them for nothing. So there's going to be a shoe to drop anyways in a major move to just really restructure the salary structure. And everything. So they're going to be doing something. And everything that me and you or anybody else discuss, I hate to say it, is going to be hypotheticals, but there's a lot of fun about the hypotheticals. I think a lot of it really has to come down to one, this is stating the obvious, where most importantly they finish in the draft lottery, because it comes down to the position they select. And two, of course, how they do this season in the playoffs. I think that's really going to change a lot of the vantage point of just how the free agents that they plan to target, how they view the Celtics as a viable threat in the Eastern Conference going forward. Because quite frankly, I mean, it's anybody's game except for Cleveland. And you say to yourself, how much longer is Cleveland have? I mean, what's the expiration label on that? 2 years maybe? I mean, I don't know. So I think it's, you know, it definitely, there's a lot of value in terms of their performance in the playoffs this year in that regard.
I've always been of the mind that people, I'm as big a LeBron fan, I think he's incredible, as anyone else. But I mean, he's still human and he's played so many minutes. And although I don't think he's going to have this steep decline, it's always a possibility. And that's why you play the game. So, I mean, and that's actually, speaking of which, I was going to see what you thought. it's always awful to see stuff like that happen, to see players go down, but there was maybe had to be a sense of relief from hearing about the Kyle Lowry wrist thing, because I think that makes the Celtics favorites over a matchup with the Raptors, in my opinion.
Probably the big what it's when you think about the teams that the Celtics struggle against, you would think, oh, it's, you know, if you have a big, can I rebound them? The Celtics are, I mean, where are they coming into recording this? Something like second to last league in rebounding rate. So you just have this assumption that they must struggle with the big teams. They can't stop. All they have is really Horford, who's an acceptable big man. Kelly Olynyk's a very good defensive big man. But, see, I mean, there are things that those guys can do, particularly defensively. Horford and Olynyk can draw those guys out of the paint. It's really been the teams with good backcourts that have given the Celtics problem. It's been Toronto in the
format. The Wizards are scary.
I would be willing to bet a substantial sum that a Celtics-Wizards series, no matter who has the home court, I would be willing to bet a substantial sum on Washington beating Boston in a playoff series. So Washington, Cleveland, Toronto with Lowry obviously in the lineup, because those small pick and rolls, those three teams are really good at finding ways to go after Isaiah Thomas, and the Celtics have gotten torched by some backcourt.
A couple things. I think that Isaiah Thomas is different this year in a real way. I think it's not just like, you know, he's improved all across the board. I think specifically what he's done is learn to utilize his size, especially offensively, in terms of fouling guys, but not getting called for it, right? Like, I mean, he uses his body, and he's built like a little tank, and he just like throws his weight into someone. They're off balance because they're trying to defend.
Excuse me, offensively. I was ready to ask you in terms of
So offensively, defensively, he's the worst player in the league.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, I was going to say too. It's just, what was the name of the website I was talking? I think to Chris, they measure you in terms of the plays that you made during the course of the game that had the biggest impact on rim probability. So, like hypothetically, say making a shot with no time left on the clock and single-handedly, you know, change the win probability from, you know, 70% to 100% or whatever. But Isaiah Thomas actually is, I believe, like a top – I think he's like top three offensively, and I think no one has had a bigger impact in terms of shooting, in terms of changing win probability in a game more so than Isaiah in regards to that. But, yeah, defensively he's the worst in the league, and Cleveland, Washington, and Toronto with their two guards in their games this year have really been the best at explaining that. And it has been, and there was a game too against Portland earlier in the year when that was the case, although they ended up getting Portland back. But it's been the teams with the backcourts. And
I mean, you got to assume, the reason I mentioned the Lowry thing specifically is what I'm thinking is that Avery Bradley's the type of guy who can pretty much deal with DeMar DeRozan. He's got that sneaky length. He's got that huge wingspan. He doesn't have to jump, so DeMar DeRozan isn't going to be
the Celtics in his career. He's killed them. I don't know what the exact numbers are, but he's had probably 240-point games, a couple of games at 35. Very, you know, he's abused Boston.
We'll see. I think part of the reason, though, is because Kyle Lowry is such a big threat. You have to be willing to, like, throw Avery Bradley or help if, you know, Kyle Lowry looks like he's getting open. I think that Kyle Lowry's wrist injury, you don't just come back from that. Like, last year he had that elbow thing, and during the playoffs he was atrocious, and everyone's like, what's going on? He's, you know, not clutch. He's, you know, falling apart in the playoffs. But he just came back from an elbow injury. That's going to screw up your shot. And now, on his shooting hand, he's got this wrist issue. I think I would be stunned, actually, if he shot, like, over 33% from three. I just think that you now have this situation where you can put Isaiah Thomas on Kyle Lowry and not just get smoked.
Well, fortunately, I guess for the Celtics, they won't be playing Toronto in the first round anyways. I certainly think that their probability of beating Toronto in a playoff series, either without a Kyle Lowry or with a Kyle Lowry that has just rejoined the team after missing, what's it going to be now, the final 2 months of the season. And he was already out with said injury, I believe, in those waning games going right up to the All-Star break. I could be wrong there. I do know that he missed that Celtics game the first Friday back from the All-Star break. So, yeah, I mean, you're totally right about that. I guess we could argue, not even argue, but I guess we could talk about till we're blue in the face about a potential Boston-Toronto second-round matchup. I think even with the Lowry situation, I would probably say the Celtics as slight favorites. And that's, of course, too, pending they keep home court. I don't think that they would be able to beat – I'm going to say they will not, but I would certainly say it would be an uphill battle to play Toronto without the home court advantage. I also – I mean, there's – you know, you hate using this, but it certainly applies to just, you know, the playoffs regardless, but just the experience in those situations – I mean, the Celtics still have yet to win a playoff series, and sometimes that's what
recently
it takes.
Isaiah Thomas.
Look at Toronto. I mean, look at Toronto. It took them years really to break through. And you mentioned Lowry, quote unquote, stinking in the playoffs. The reason why there was that frustration there with Lowry and even DeRozan is because in Brooklyn they struggled against them. They were complete no shows 1 year, I think, when they got swept by Washington. So for whatever reason, that stigma is there with teams that just don't break through and quite frankly could break through there for the Celtics. So there still is sort of that thing there with the Celtics, right? In terms of, oh my God, they still have yet to win a playoff series. They've still won a grand total of 2 playoff games under Brad Stevens. How are they going to play in some of these situations? I love to say like, oh, I definitely love, but there still is that dreaded cliche there. Fortunately, I guess for the Celtics is probably a lot of these other teams in the Eastern Conference, especially in the first round, they're likely not going to have that either, right? I think Atlanta there was a little high up, and you know maybe Chicago I think would be the biggest problem. But some of these other teams, just I don't have the standings in front of me, but off the top of my head, we're talking about what possibly Miami sneaking in, Detroit is there right now. Who else is like Indiana, right? Indiana.
I mean that part of the East is pretty much wide open.
Yeah, I would say too, boss. While Boston has really yet to win a playoff series, I would be fairly confident they would beat all those teams, except Chicago could be an issue. The Celtics
now that would be a big deal if they lost in the first round to like the Pistons. Or
yeah,
the Bulls.
39 win Pistons team that are not even selling out playoff games at Auburn Hills. Yeah, and I don't think
that would be bad.
Wouldn't happen. But Chicago,
I mean.
But
go ahead.
Chicago would be an issue with them just only because they've never played well in Chicago. I want to say, my entire life. I think I've seen, you know, let's see, I've been watching the NBA since 1991. I've probably seen the Celtics win about 5 games in Chicago.
Well, you know, Chicago always wins on TNT, and all of the playoff games are on TNT.
Also, they could be, well, yeah, with the Celtics, I was going to say they could be relegated to NBA TV, but I don't think a Celtics-Chicago series would find its way.
I don't think so. Who are you personally hoping to match up with in the first round? I mean, I think that's not quite obvious.
As someone who has a vested interest in the team, knowing that if the more the Celtics play basketball, the more people listen to my podcast, which means the more money we can get through sponsorships, that means I want the Celtics to win, already topping off on me being a fan of the team. Ideally, I would probably have to say Detroit, right?
It's got to be.
Miami, let's put it this way. If Miami can find a way to sneak in, I mean, I know they've played very well since the new year, but the Celtics have already played them 3 times. Well, there was one competitive game, but that was when I believe that was the Celtics' 4th game in 5 nights right before the new year, and Celtics still won that game. They've already played them 3 times, and the 2 in Miami have been a joke, like 2 very uncompetitive games. And I know the regular season is not always indicative of what happens in the postseason, but you were just talking about playoff experience, right? I mean, Miami has virtually none. So if Miami snuck in, I guess that should be a layup for the Celtics. Detroit should be something that's fairly easy for Boston. Indiana, they still have their sort of issues. You're talking about lineup experimentation. Indiana really still has nothing really set in stone with them, and their defense isn't really, you know, cooking. I think Chicago would be just interesting in that I think it would make from everyone, from people within the organization to the players to fans. I think people would be fairly skittish about Boston matching up with Chicago.
I get what you're saying against the Heat. I would be scared to be going up against a team that's been that hot. And I would also be scared because maybe this is a hot take. I don't think it is, though. I think Spoelstra is probably, I mean, it's so hard to evaluate at this point, but if I was starting an NBA team, I'd rather have Spoelstra coaching my team than Brad Stevens. And there's like three guys I would say that about.
Tweet that out. You'll pick up another 5,000 downloads on this broadcast.
Yeah. Well, Spoelstra's amazing, man. I mean, he's
a very good coach. He's a very good coach, but I'd feel fairly confident from what I've seen of Celtics-Miami games this year, because the Celtics can just pack the paint against that team. And that's really been that's been the one underlying issue about the Celtics this year, right? Is that the defense is somewhat underachieved compared to just any outside expectations of the team. And it's not really an effort thing. We've certainly seen the Celtics dial it up. And I mean, almost any NBA team can go through a stretch of a game or a stretch through a season where the defense looks like it's cooking on all cylinders. You have players all over the place. Marcus Smart's diving on the floor. And there have been games like, you know, fourth quarter against the Rockets, which has been, you know, we mentioned the Celtics have some really good wins. That was one of their really good wins, was a back-to-back against Houston. And in the fourth quarter, they were just all over the place. But defensively, there are just some issues with the team, and that you have Al Horford playing power forward a lot of minutes and he's a little bit slow of foot. You have the whole Isaiah Thomas conundrum, and that's using a nice word to be very kind to him. So there have been just some really just I'm drawing blank on a word, but just in terms of how I can talk about Boston's defense. But there are just more fundamental issues with their defense than it is, say, an effort thing. As opposed to why it is underperformed of what many thought that it would be, and compared to what it has been in 2015, when I believe it was top 12.
Another great theory about why that is.
Okay, well, one thing, but let me just go to that Miami thing. And then,
go ahead.
Then I'll let you talk on your show, by the way. But see, that's mitigated in that Boston, I believe, could just pack the paint against Miami. So it really wouldn't be an issue. And that's what they've done in the three games this year. And outside of that four game and five nights matchup where they had against Miami, that's why they've really been able to just slow Miami down. And that's gotten rid of their defensive problem. Okay, you can talk now, Chris, on your show.
Yeah. Was most of those games were earlier on in the season, I think. Yep. And yep. You were saying, as far as they struggle with two elite guards, Dion Waiters, he's been elite for the second half of the season. He's been fantastic. But I'm not going to go arguing that Dion Waiters is going to go Michael Jordan on the Celtics. What I'll say instead is that, you know, there's this tendency to mimic the champion. And, you know, you've been covering the league long enough to know what I'm talking about. Like, everyone's like, right after the Warriors start to be great and they have that 67-ring championship run.
We just want to do what San Antonio does. And it's like, oh, wow.
Right, exactly.
What a great GM this guy is. Or even if you're watching the NFL, like you'll listen to an Ian Eagle, who I love, he'll just say, oh, I talked to Adam Gase in his first year with the Miami Dolphins, and he says he wants to put in a program of the way the New England Patriots do, and then they blah, 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 oh, that's a great idea, blah, 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 but it's like, oh, yeah,
easier. Yeah, just go get Tom Brady. Go get Tim Duncan. Easy.
Yeah, a little easier said than done.
Right. But last year, I think that what people are picking up on, what the big thing that people picked up on from last year is how to deal with Steph Curry, how to deal with elite point guards who are diminutive, who can be pushed around, who you can put through multiple screens, who you can put through basically a washing machine by just throw everything at them, like pinch them when they go by, like just hit them basically. And Isaiah Thomas, to me, I think is basically getting, on a fairly frequent basis, the Steph Curry treatment, right? I think coaches saw, everyone's watching in the finals, and they're like, huh, you know, this is a good idea. Maybe we should try this. And then, yeah, first 10 games in the season, you try that on Isaiah Thomas, the league collectively realizes that he dies on every screen. I've never seen him not die on a screen, I think. And like, it's pretty much good night at that point as far as your defense, because you could just put your best player on Isaiah Thomas, or put your best player out there, try to get a switch onto Isaiah Thomas and exploit it. And it sort of like
And there's no redeeming quality about his defense for either. I mean, you can just obviously you can shoot over him for the obvious reasons that he's 5'7", not 5'9". And for whatever reason, I don't know why, he still has even the big problem staying in front of even smaller guards. I just, you know, that's just my one peeve of mine. And there is just the fact that he can't really seem to make himself useful in any regards, even like Allen Iverson played passing lanes back in the
early 2000s. No, well, I mean, he's literally the worst point guard defender. Yeah. Well,
no sense to lament, which it's a fact of life.
Move so, yeah, well, I mean, what do you think about that idea that it's sort of being copied, that people are going a little bit back to that ISO game that was more popular a decade ago and a couple decades ago, the 90s basketball that Tyronn Lue was using.
Everyone's a Jordan. So you're going to hate my response to this. It's a capital idea, period.
Is that something that's crossed your mind?
It hasn't. You have educated me to such. Learned something new.
I'm honored right now. I feel pretty good about that. Yeah. No, that's a theory I've been toying around with pretty much like all season because, I mean, that's really it. I think, you know, I'm not sure if you have a Synergy subscription, you know, where they aggregate all of the plays that any player or team has gone through.
Post-ups every single day. That's like my one thing, first thing when it's like, all right, where does... Because that's been a sort of another agitative thing of mine is because the Celtics still seem to post up Al Horford a lot. And I think that, I don't know, we're now really just starting to ramble along and just shooting the breeze a little bit. But the Al Horford post up has been more inefficient than an Antoine Walker 3. And if anyone who's not old enough, an Antoine Walker 3 is excruciatingly inefficient.
You got them both paid, though.
If you remember those days, but you know, I check that every single day. Is Al Horford in the blocks? Not very good. So yeah, I can't. Yeah. How good are you at interrupting you on your show? It's unbelievable.
No worries. So it's cool. I think you have better points about the Celtics than I do. Even though I did make that killer point about killing Isaiah Thomas on screens. So what do you want in the second round? And I do want to break down the Celtics Wizard matchup as the last thing that we talk about, just because I agree with you. I think that that's going to be really tough. I think that
I don't see that one happening. I really don't.
I'm sorry.
I don't see that one happening for the Celtics. I really don't. It's just not only and it's odd too because I don't if I recall. When I talk to the Wizards play-by-play announcer, be it, you know, Steve Buckhantz or Dave Johnson, who does their radio play-by-play. And if I recall, so the Wizards always just destroy the Celtics on the board every time they play, even going right back to the very first game of the year, which is actually the game Washington turned their season around. Once upon a time, Washington looked like the worst team in the NBA, couldn't defend, couldn't guard the three-point line. What were they, like 3-9 at one point? I don't even know. Like,
you got to trade Bradley Beal.
They were horrible.
Blow it up. Get John Wall out of there.
And I just said, oh, yeah, you know, the Wizards, they're this great. And every time I talk to them, like, oh, no, they're not. It's just they just seem to dominate the Celtics on the board. So you have that in regards, and then you just have the whole, you know, really just the problems with the guards. And also, too, what's forgotten about the Wizards, I hate going back to this and throwing that dreaded cliche of, quote-unquote, playoff experience. But that is there, too. That's like another small edge that Washington has over Boston. Although I will say this, from an entertainment standpoint, everyone, there's always been a little cute little lament of, oh, these guys, they're friends off the court. For whatever reason, Celtics Wizards playoff games on the scale of a hatred scale of going back to Heat Knicks in the 1990s in terms of hatred, I'll say Celtics Wizards. There's actually like a little something there. It's like a 4 out of 10.
There was that funeral game.
Yeah. They were right, the silliness of them. From an entertainment standpoint, you can get a little bit. It's good bargain basement shopping from an entertainment standpoint to get a Celtics Wizards second round playoff series. But I
watched that game.
which that was the one in Washington, correct?
Yeah. No, the one where, and just so the listener knows, the funeral game was when everyone on the Wizards decided to wear black, which is not the first time that's happened. I think it's the first time it's happened in the regular season.
Yeah, in the regular season. Who did it in the playoffs? I want to say it was like...
Mavs. Okay. Because I remember Jason Terry won Sixth Man of the Year that year, and he said that he was going to kill someone, and then he wore black in Game 7 of the finals, and then we lost.
There was some team that did it, and then they ended up
losing. Yeah, there's one more team.
This is now going to kill me. I feel like, oh, you know who did it? I want to say the Knicks did it against the Celtics one year in the playoffs, and the Celtics ended up winning that game in New York. I want to say it was 2013. Knicks did it against, let's see how good I am. 2013, Knicks Celtics playoffs.
I'm looking this up right now.
I want to see. Let's see. This will make for an unbelievable. This will make for one of the greatest moments in the history of the Almighty Baller Podcast. I want to say it happened in Game 5.
If you make this half court shot, I'm going to be incredibly impressed.
Here we go. 2013 NBA playoffs. Mike Woodson upset that his team wore all black on Wednesday before Game 5 of the Knicks-Celtics series to mimic a funeral for Boston. There it is. May 2nd, 2013. Ian Begley, ESPN staff writer.
Well, if Isaiah Thomas plays like that.
Wanted to do that.
Well, okay, so yeah, I mean, we've already both said that the Wizards are that it's a pretty bad matchup, and I mean, going from the Wizards, you would play the Cavaliers after that, and
not me. Thankfully, not me.
Yeah. Did I say you guys?
I get the dreaded "you guys" all the time, and that's usually when I say, "Listen, it's not me." Thankfully, you know, because I'm not paying the player salaries, which is a good thing.
I don't try to do it. It's like instinctual.
Yeah, it's a good thing too, or else people like Al Horford would be, you know, flooded with IOUs up to their knees.
Right. How do you win in a Wizard series? And I'm not sure that we even have to talk about how do you win in a Cavs series. But
Sully and Mick would have to club LeBron, basically.
Right. Yeah.
You would have to make a movie called Celtic Pride 2.
Yeah. You'd need to, like, it would
the
need to be
2017 Eastern Conference Finals.
A Boston mob thing, you know.
Don't rule
like
it.
Like LeBron would have to just disappear, you know.
Don't rule it out.
Yeah. But how do the Celtics beat the Wizards? How did they win against the Wizards earlier in the year? Because I'm fairly certain they won at least one game.
They won. That was the whole funeral game. There was a huge, you know, I don't know.
Didn't the Wizards win that?
Very first game of the year, Washington won. It was very early November. Like I said, it was when the Wizards got off to that horrible start, and Washington just destroyed them. They got out to like a 7-1 advantage on the rebounding, and it was just a complete wire-to-wire 30-point blowout, Otto Porter's career game to that point. Then there was a game, oh my goodness, when was this? Probably like early January, mid-January. And this is when Washington's really started to get cooking, and the Celtics were just – that we were talking about the dreaded make or miss league. They missed shots last night against the Clippers. They just made a boatload of shots against Washington. They were able to hold on. And that was the game where just, you know, a, God forbid, a little mix-up happened at the end of the game, Crowder, Smart, and John Wall. And then that led to the whole all-black thing. And then Washington got the Celtics down there in Washington, I want to say probably like, I don't know, it was like a week or two after that game. And they do have one more game. I want to say it's coming up like a week away. I want to say it's in and around they return to the West, from the West Coast. Let me just look up this rep right now. I got the
Let's see.
It is. March 20th. It's a Monday night. So that'll be something to watch. The Celtics are going to really have a problem with Washington. The one game in which that they did win this year, like I referenced to, they just were really hot that game. I think that was right around when they were in this stretch.
It was there. January 11th.
They made something like 15 three-pointers for a few, or about 10. They were making double to three-pointers for X amount of games in a row, and that game fell in that stretch. It's going to be a challenge for the Celtics really to beat the Wizards just because of that matchup. Washington always seems to really get under them on the glass, so there's not that advantage. And then they just have that whole issue with the guards and being able to just really exploit Isaiah Thomas and, you know, keep everything away from maybe Avery Bradley. And it just really doesn't add up for the Celtics playing Washington. I really would not like their chances one iota.
Well, I think that the way that the Celtics would need to win, and this sort of gets to, I think,
scoring
this,
more points.
What?
Scoring more points for 4 out of the 7 games?
Right. Yeah. No, it's going to have to be like, how do the Rockets beat the Warriors? Well, by winning 140 to 130.
Yeah. What? Yeah, you're exactly right. I'm stuttering because I know I almost not given much thought to it, in that that is something I really feel like you could simply write off for Boston.
Like write off, like it's just not going to happen.
I'm leaning towards that way. That's just, it's one of those matchups where I don't want to say for whatever reason, because you can just look at everything sort of on paper as to why, but it just doesn't really add up for them.
I don't know, man. Kelly Olynyk, Al Horford, Crowder's been money from three. Avery Bradley has had a great year. And Isaiah Thomas, you know, I think it might happen.
See the Celtics until, I mean, I hate to do this. They got to prove it to me. I've just yet really. To
yeah. Show me Celtics. The money. Right.
I really, really have to see the Celtics really show exactly what they can do against teams with great backcourts. They have really not given that formula for anybody else to see. Maybe it's part of the Brad Stevens grand plan, but just for anyone with an outside vantage point looking at it, we've yet to see the Celtics put forth a formula, a scheme that is very visible and blatantly obvious for somebody to see what they can do about teams with these very good backcourts.
Well, I think there is an answer, and that's kind of scary. It's you play what? Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley.
I don't know. That's not.
No, I like the when only you replace.
That I really do see would be the bench. Because Washington's bench is a little sketchy, but you know Boston's bench isn't the bench. Maybe they just have.
Yeah, they went out and got Bojan Bogdanovic, who scored 27 points in his first game. I sort of like the Wizards bench now, and they picked up Brandon Jennings, superstar Brandon Jennings.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Celtics. I mean we were talking about it earlier that. You know, it's so tempting to just talk hypotheticals, to just talk, you know, are they going to go young and like build around Markelle Fultz and these first round picks or these number one picks, or are they going to go all in and get Gordon Hayward and Jimmy Butler? It's interesting. And I think it's tempting because it's been said, you know, about the Celtics that they don't hang conference championship banners. You know, the only banners up there are full championship banners, and it's hard for me to see a line from the Celtics to a championship
for 2017. Yeah, but I think right. 538, 4%, and I believe that 4% goes back to what we were referencing with the Celtics Pride 2 of taking steel, you know, lead pipes to many of the players' legs. That I think that's where the 4% falls. But you're right, and you're totally right. And this is just sort of the one thing that I have with the Celtics is, and you hate, you know, using that dreaded, oh, there's so much to talk about. The Celtics actually do very well give you your money's worth in the grand scheme of the digital media.
Well, and I guess that's why you host a Celtics Beat. Most downloaded, Larry H. Russell, author of The Fall of the Boston Celtics, right?
Yes, thank you. I hope that isn't leading off my eulogy, though, although it suffices for the sign out on a podcast.
Hey, if I wrote a book, I would tell everyone, always. I would introduce myself as Chris Axman, author. Instead, I'm Chris Axman, podcaster. You've been listening to Almighty Ball and NBA Show. Check out the rest of the network at almightyballer.com. Also, check out the rest of Larry's network. Download the CLNS app. Listen to great shows. Game Theory is awesome. That's a new addition. They just added the Lakers Court. Is that the name of it?
Lakers Nation Courtcast. Sam Vecenie.
Yeah, Courtcast. That's right.
We'll love that Game Theory shout out, especially with March Madness coming up. And of course, as everybody knows, Danny LaRue, the world famous Real Jam Radio.
Sixers beat.
Coach Nick.
Derek Bodner. Down.
Going right down the laundry list, man. You're good at it. You're good.
There's a lot of great shows on CLNS. So if you haven't checked that out, anyone who's listening, definitely go do that. Larry, I appreciate you coming on to talk about the Celtics. There's so much to talk about.
Sincerely appreciate you having me on, Chris. It was awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening.